I waited on the Lord and I saw Indian relics, pieces of pottery, not jewelry or any other thing. I saw cliff dwellings, and so I asked her if she had ever been to Mesa Verde. She immediately reacted. She said yes. She said she knew immediately it was there, and as a child, preteen, she and others had gone all over and played in the many remote unexplored cliff dwellings and around the adobe burial pits. As we began to rebuke this demon of necromancy, speaking to the dead world, it mocked me, saying, I don't have to leave because she still has me. I asked if she still had any pottery or relics. She said, Oh no, I had forgotten all about that. It's just some old pieces of pottery buried way down in the drawer. She made a commitment to get rid of it as soon as she got home, and we rebuked the demon and it left. Glory. Also, the demon of astrology left. She said later that she really didn't remember if she ever played spirit men in these places, but when we rebuked it, something really reacted in her. She thinks perhaps it was this spirit which caused her to be so interested in the archaeology, geology, paleontology, and evolution in college. She kept the pottery because it was great sentimental value to her. Now, while this isn't a super positive thing, it may be another case of an indicator of some things that we have laying about that may have some relationship to demonic religions, the occult. America is full of demonism. Oh, I forgot a book. No, honey, it's all right. I'll go without it. I meant to bring one book, and I failed, which I have a whole list of all of these things that we've got loaded in America, quite a long list. But let me just say that most of you have been around long enough to know that this world is full of and this country is full of everything from mental telepathy, astral projection, you know, ESP, clairvoyance, palm reading, cranial reading, tea leaf reading, reading the sticks thrown down, astrology, just loads, crystal ball gazing, automatic writing, just on and on and on. The list is a very, very long list of all the things that you would recognize if I read you the long, long list, and all these things are becoming common in America today. In fact, even the military and the government and industry is looking to and using a number of these occult things. And in our schools, we're finding it there also. For your notes, I was going to read the section in the Battling the Hosts of Hell, page 219 and 220. Now, many testimonies reveal demonic power through occult signs and many things that Christians thought were innocent. And see, we have been brought up in Christian America not to believe in the spirit realm. The average American in college does not believe in either demonic spirit realm or God's spirit realm. He doesn't really believe in angels. He doesn't believe in demons. He doesn't believe in Satan. He doesn't believe in God. Or if he does, it's just in an abstract way. He doesn't believe in the Holy Spirit. He doesn't believe in the moving of the Spirit. He doesn't believe that man really has any contact in the spirit world as real spirits. He thinks everything's a myth. He thinks all the Greek mythology. He doesn't know there's any demonism in the mythology. He doesn't know there's any demonism in witchcraft. He thinks everything is free of demons. And that's why when there are demons manifesting themselves, there are men like Pike and others who all of a sudden, and like in speaking from the dead, necromancy and so forth, they begin to think, oh, I've gotten, this must be my son that I'm hearing from the dead, because they know nothing about demons. They have nothing in their mind to give any other alternative to that idea. And so we just poo-poo all these things as a myth, and there's a natural skepticism and a natural naivety and natural unbelief in Americans as to spirit world. They are materialists. They only deal with the material. Now, the last generation, indeed, has all of a sudden moved, burst out into the spirit world, like has never been done in America before. And so, a lot of them are into a lot of things. But basically, in a theological and philosophical concept, America is agnostic in their mind toward the spirit world. And we need to be careful lest our bringing up keep us too naive and skeptical. We know very little of the spirit world for the most part. Now, to show our abysmal ignorance, when we were young and we were in high school and junior high school and grade school, most of us read of ghosts, incantations, witches, curses, black cats, and spells, and suspected nothing demonic. Now that shows how abysmally ignorant we can be. Even going to your church and reading of all the witches, curses, spells, and brews, and all the spells and all these things, and the ghost spirits going so forth, rattling things in houses, suspected nothing demonic. Take a very blatant thing and suspect nothing. Shows you how totally naive and ignorant we were. So we need to be careful because we haven't come all the way out of that ignorance and skepticism yet. The spirit world may be a lot bigger thing. It may have a lot of things in it that we don't really understand even as yet. America is pushing demonism today and belittling and ignoring God. There is very little lifting up the Almighty God, Jesus Christ, in America today, in government, in mass media, any place that people can see it, but they're loading it full of the occult. This country has moved from honoring as the forefathers God and is now shutting off that and opening up to the occult. And it's no wonder that we are headed right into the Antichrist government, the harlot church, into very great evil. No wonder the world is fast becoming corrupt. Here's a school book, England in Literature. America Reads England in Literature. A book for children, still has a property of Yelm High School. And here it is, people here, 1965. And just reading a couple of places, showing you what books they choose for children to read. This thing is full of this, but just a few places. Page 263 to begin with. This poem is called How Sweet I Roamed. How sweet I roamed. This following poem was reputedly written before Blake had reached his 14th birthday. Observe how nearly it approaches the delicate imaginary, the ease and quiet beauty, and the natural melody of Elizabethan songs. That's going to be really sweet. How sweet I roamed from field to field and tasted all the summer's pride, till I the prince of love beheld who in the sunny beams did glide. He showed me lilies for my hair and blushing roses for my brow. He led me through his gardens fair where all his golden pleasures grow. With sweet May dews my wings were wet, and Phoebus fired my vocal rage. He caught me in his silken net and shut me in his golden cage. He loves to sit and hear me sing, then laughing, sports and plays with me, then stretches out my golden wings and mocks my loss of liberty. Then it says, footnote, Phoebus, Apollo, the Greek god of the sun and also the god of music and poetry. In other words, this god caught him, put him in a cage and mocks his loss of liberty. That's how sweet I roamed. And this god turns out to be a demonic god. Or we can read page 281. Won't take time to read it all because there's so much I've got to cover today. But I just want to read the footnote. It talks about Proteus. And it says, Proteus, or Triton, sea gods in Greek mythology. In other words, demonic spirits have deceived them into thinking that they are God and put them before the Almighty God, which things God forbid in his word. On page 314, Ode to the West Wind. In the first three sections of the poem, the poet addresses the wind as the enchanter, right into demonism, that drives the leaves and the clouds and the storms and lashes the seas to fury. In the final sections, he expresses the hope that the wind will play upon him. Now, the wind's an enchanter. Now, he expresses the hope that the enchanter, the wind, will play upon him as if he were a lyre, that is a musical instrument, driving his dead thoughts over the universe His poems might then become the seed of a new spirit in man, a spirit of universal brotherhood and justice. See? Brought forth by an enchanter. I'll just read you just verse one. There's five verses here. O wild west wind, thou breath of autumn's being, thou from whom unseen presence the leaves dead are driven like ghosts from the enchanter fleeing. Yellow and black and pale and hectic red, pestilence-stricken multitudes. O thou who chariest to the dark wintry bed, the wing-seed seeds where they lay cold and low, each like a corpse within its grave, until time as your sister of the spring shall blow her clarion over the dreaming earth and fill, driving sweet buds like flocks to feed in the air with living hues and odors plain and hill. Wild spirit, which art moving everywhere, destroyer and preserver, hero, heal. And on until finally he wants that thing to come and drive him and his thoughts to bring peace to all and brotherhood. What manner of things are they teaching our children in the Christian school? I mean, in school. Or we can see this book here. It even sunk down toward its maker. On trolls of Norway. And it's full of ugly-looking beasts. When you was a child, remember Billy Goat Gruff that crossed the bridge? And the troll said, "Who is that crossing my bridge?" I never knew what a troll was. It was always a troll, whoever he was. This is books of trolls all of Norway. Ugly creatures, terribly ugly creatures. Just demonic-looking things. And what do we read in just a couple places? Now, I won't be able to take 10,000 notes here today. I've got all I can handle to do this. There was another. These are all ugly things. And they've all been made up, you know, with cloth and socks and various things for the children to play with. And he has a little introduction in the front. There was another kind of boon, Nokin, that lived in the bottom of Wales. They are very mean and very dangerous. The Nokin lures little children over near enough to the well so they can look down and see the reflection in the water. To do this, they must come close to the edge of the well. Well, this is just what the Nokin has been waiting for. He has very long arms. Without warning, he reaches up and drags the child down into the well. When he's finished destroying the little one, he is very happy. Sound like demons to me. See? Oh, we have this one over here, and they're all this way. I mean, these are no exceptions in the book. There are never spiteful skeptics who have stated that, in their opinion, there was a bit of a troll in everyone's makeup. They insist that if we cast a careful, self-critical, and searching look at ourselves, we could hardly help seeing it. Do you think you have a bit of troll in you? If you'd like to find out, we have arranged a little test for you so you may learn. And here is this ugly, demonic face with one eye in front, an ugly face, and a blank square over here. Blow are two frames of identical size, and one of them you see a picture of a troll's head, while the other is blank. Let someone time you where you spend at least 30 seconds staring hard and intently in the eye of the troll in frame number one. At the signal of time, immediately shift your gaze to frame number two. Now do you see a ghostly figure of a troll's head there too? If you can pick up that thing in your mind so vividly and transfer it over and you see it in this blank square, you have a bit of troll in you too. You have now collected him. Well, we got this Odyssey. A little game was sent to me. Asked a question about it. And I first saw this game, a little computer game. I thought, oh, this person is kind of going overboard, you know. And then I looked, and I couldn't believe it. Right in the front. It's electronic power game. It says, blocked out, breakdown. Two demonically challenging games filled with a diabolical wall-to-wall action. And then what you do here is you take these little joysticks and you move your demon, and they're called demons. And you move your demons against other demons. These demons have power to block things and so forth. And you learn to control demons against things to get force and so forth. For people to play, to learn to control demons the way that you want them. All of these things out for the Americans, Christian America. And like dumb beasts led to the slaughter, swallow it all with glee. The Great Pyramid. is thought by British Israelites and by many Christians to be the House of Prophecy. And I've got the book that thick, Destiny with the Great Pyramid, all the details. I've got a lot of that stuff in it. And I know how the claims and the Christians have. There was a British royal archaeologist who measured everything, and he came to the conclusion that he could fix every point in history by the pyramid inch and the future history. And there have been so many Christians, Pentecostal Christians, and others who have fallen for that. And today there are many of them that think that that pyramid in Egypt is God's prophecy stone, his perfect prophecy, much more perfect than the Bible, giving you all the details of man from the beginning of time to the end of time in perfect, beautiful harmony of the whole universe, that God had caused people to spend millions of man hours to build this great huge stone laying in Egypt that he might have a prophecy for man. I say baloney. I say this roots are in the occult. I deny that this is God's prophecy place. His is in the Word of God, not over there in Egypt. They sell pyramid shapes. You can buy and put them in your house. Just four rods sitting under that you might get the all this. I don't know what it is exactly, but you're in this pyramid palace and this whatever, this happiness that you get from all this stuff. Jazz music, for example, and calypso bands, the type of thing, has come from the African slaves practicing witchcraft in Africa. And just like Reverend McAllister said, Brazil is almost all practicing, almost 100%, not quite, 97% practicing Catholics, or Catholic by faith, but 85% practicing Spiritism. And he said the Portuguese brought in Catholicism, and then they brought in slaves from Africa who brought in the heathenism, and most of the country is practicing Spiritism. And he's down there in the fourth floor of a big skyscraper in Rio de Janeiro with his church, doctors, lawyers, other people. I've heard him speak. And that land is loaded with that type of thing. I made a statement about 10 years ago. I said, that land there is what you're going to see in America in about 10 years from now. Well, that's exactly what's happening. In the last 10 years, this country has been loaded up so much with the occult. Here is a book called Into the Unknown. I'm just hoping I'm not taking too much time because I want to get in quickly into all these other things. One nearly universal method of coping with the multitudes of unseen spirits is to build shrines for them. If a spirit can be persuaded to take up residence in a shrine, its power can be more easily contained. And you see shrines all over the world in the Orient and various places. Voodoo. While the beliefs and magical practice of voodoo are almost constant on the island of Haiti, they spread easily to the United States via the slave trade, gaining their first and most powerful foothold in Louisiana in the 18th century. By the mid-19th century, voodoo's local influence was great enough to permit a self-promoting mambo, Maria Lavelle, to become a New Orleans celebrity, patronized by white and black alike. From Louisiana, Georgia, and South Carolina, voodoo spread north into the ghettos and barriers of the big industrial cities. As recently as 1978, police officer Hugh Cassidy, former commander of New York's 77th Precinct, estimated that in the Bedford Stuyvesant section of Brooklyn, just one section of Brooklyn, there were 30 secret humophores, perhaps 100 practicing hunguns, and mambos, just in that one section. The Enigmatic Druids. In the 3rd century B.C., Julius Caesar was one of the first to report on the white-robed druids and their sinister activities in remote caves and hidden oak groves. He did not mention Stonehenge up in England, but the druids might have worshipped there, for its construction had already been completed. As priests of the ancient Celts who populated much of France and Britain, the druids often functioned, and then all these bloody came from Israel, who were scattered across the 10 tribes under Jeroboam, who rebelled and took in idolatry. Who populated much of France and Britain, the Druids often functioned as arbiters and judges, settling disputes, passing judgment, and assigning the penalties. Here, these people within the demonism were the judges. In addition, they were sometimes charged with honoring the gods by sacrifice, mostly animal but occasionally human, and with controlling the mysterious workings of spirits and souls. Today, Simeon Druid mood of fear and witchery survives as Halloween. And so all the Christians and Pentecostal churches have the Halloween parties and bring in all the occult and have the Halloween parties together, bring all the symbols. Secret societies have long been an essential ingredient in mankind's fascination with the art and power of magic. One of the most elusive yet oft mentioned is the Fraternity of the Rosy Cross, the Order of Rosicrucians. Christian Rosenkreuz, a pious and learned young man who had traveled for years in the Near East and returned to Germany, a master of mathematics and the natural sciences, as well as a possessor of certain occult knowledge. This is not a religious book. For centuries, the witch was both honored and loved. Whether man or woman, the witch was consulted by all for relief in sickness, for counsel in trouble, for foreknowledge of coming events. You know, the wizards, they go to them and they learn from the wizard and the wise, you know, and the cult, and they conjecture up spells to cast on evil and on others, and things, magic potions to drink, and they foretell your futures. And Europe is loaded with that. The European history is loaded. There are many films and books and other things about it. And here are tarot cards, the art of the tarot. The gypsies possess a Bible. Yes, this card game is called the tarot, which the gypsies possess is the Bible of the Bibles, wrote Gerard Encasse in 1889 and tracing the tarot's origin to the gypsies who wandered from India into Europe. Yet Anton Cort de Gebelin, among the most famous of the tarot theorists, wrote in 1781 that the card's markings distill all Egyptian knowledge. The minor arcana, the face and number cards from which our modern playing cards derive. The design of the oldest existing pack, date from 1392, has shown little change over the years. Tarot cards were used not only to tell fortunes, but to play fashionable card games. In the history of divination, I Ching, or Book of Changes, has a unique place. It's both ancient and modern, primitive and sophisticated. The system has been used in China for thousands of years. It has enjoyed remarkable favor in the Western world in the 20th century. 20th century in America is becoming the occult world. The use of a mirror as a divinatory tool is part of universal folklore. The fairy tale Snow White, based on European folk tradition, portrays the wicked stepmother asking, "Mirror, mirror upon the wall, who is the fairest of them all?" A cult coming right in to the Walt Disney films that we thought were so innocent. Seeing with trembling hands, the Navajo Indian in the United States practices one of the most mysterious of the many forms of divination, a technique that depends on a trance-like state of physical decontrol known as hand trembling. The American anthropologist, Dr. Clyde Cluckhorn, studied and reported on his personal experience with one hand trembler, a particular Navajo diviner by the name of Gregorio. Cluckhorn and his wife visited a Navajo reservation on a field trip. Once there, having heard about Gregorio's skill, they decided to combine as practical with a scholarly and ask him to attempt to locate a handbag that Mrs. Cluckhorn had lost only a few days before. His wife had lost it on the trip down there, and so he asked him to find it, since he was a hand trembler diviner, to check him out, you know, historically, and scientifically, so forth. After listening to the Cluckhorns, Gregorio rolled up his sleeves, carefully washed his arms and hands, and climbed slowly to the top of a hill. While facing north, he sprinkled corn pollen on his right hand and began to tremble. Next, he rubbed the palms of both hands together, and in a short while, his left hand began to tremble as well. Gregorius continued his ritual several times with his eyes closed. He then slowly moved his hands as if to form an outline of a missing bag. Finally, explaining to the Cluckhorns that the missing bag could be found at the local trading post, and there it was. Hand trembling's link with dowsing is obvious, and in the past was remarkably direct. Hand tremblers, once in a state of apparent physical decontrol, were often used to divine the presence of underground water. So now you got witching, water witching. The American Society of Dowsers, which boasts more than 2,000 dew-playing members, estimates there are at least 25,000 practicing dowsers in the United States. It's a fact, he said, that the Occidental Petroleum Corporation got its start as a petroleum industry when it bought 10 producing wells that had been successfully doused. Even the U.S. Marine Corps has made use of dowsing, and so forth. 1978, according to a Gallup poll, 1,200 of 1,750 U.S. newspapers carried horoscope columns. In other words, 12 out of 17 newspapers carried horoscope, demonic things. By 1978, when Gallup undertook a broad survey of U.S. belief in a wide range of paranormal phenomena, fully 29% of the United States public said they believed in astrology. So saturated has the popular culture become with the astrological law that in 1976, Gallup found that 76% of the population could name their own sign. Seemingly most interested of all, however, the French, a full 53% of whom admitted to reading the horoscope regularly during 1963. Well, being atheists, I'm not surprised. Now, Today, you know, cult movies, monster movies. Now, there should be a deep concern over having any object in one's possession or house that has directly linked to the devil. Christians should avoid the following objects: satyrs, nymphs. Now, in anything, I don't care what it is, don't write me these questions, but show me you haven't heard. And say, well, I got a ring and it's got a nymph on it. Is it okay? Or it's got a unicorn. I'm going to read it. I will not be able to decide for you, so you can have pastor decide. If I decide I don't see any problem in something you've got, that doesn't mean there's no problem. It just means I don't see a problem in it. I don't know everything behind all these things. I haven't been in this world, in this occult world. And I don't have all knowledge in all these things. And but these things should be avoided in any realm as far as wearing them on you or having them in your home as your property. And reading them and studying them and so forth. Satyrs, nymphs, leprechauns, witches, dwarfs, trolls, giants, magic, genies, unknown and nonsensical words. You don't know what kind of chance those things came from the past. Abracadabra, for example. Good luck omens, charms and signs, gods, one-half human creatures, they're gods. Ugly personifications, almost all of those things are of demonic, those gods and demonic and the Roman occult. Mythological stories, signs and symbols from heathen countries, idols, heathen architecture, and heathen non-realistic design. these are I don't mean pictures of people, you know, tilling the soil, but these non-realistic all kinds of designs, you know, you don't know what's in that from the heathen world. And the Japanese, the way they rake their gardens, just the patterns and the rakings, all are symbolic and tell a religious story. That's been told many times. Chants, stories involving trauma, terror, fears, hate, violence, murder, adultery, monsters, astrology, pranks, imps, ghosts, jinx, omens, spells, amulets, apparitions, werewolves, dragons, wizards, zombies, seals, mermaids, and orgies. In books, movies, or TV, musical plays, regardless of the author, whether classical, whether Shakespearean, or whether Walt Disney, are dangerous. Acupuncture, you know, the ching and the chang and all the wing and the wang and all that stuff. Mind-altering drugs, horseshoes over doors in your barn, unicorns, horses with horns, gods according to this book right here. Stems and pictures of sinful and bad memories of the old life. If you've broken off the old life, don't keep you full of these old, sinful, bad memories that have evil and so forth. Get rid of it. Playing cards, Aztec chess and ornaments, Greek, Oriental, African, South Pacific gods and religions, also from India, images that represent the devil, serpents, spiders, and things that represent, you know, demons. Anything grotesque that brings fear, torment, or cruelty, lodges, and fraternities with secret and questionable initiations. These secret initiations, which you have to say all these spells and chants and do these things, are dangerous. So just the other day telling me the fraternity initiation, terribly demonic. how many currently belong to the Masonic Lodge? Can I see your hands? How many used to belong to the Masonic Lodge? Well, not many Masons here. We've got the books loaded. That just tell you that thing is loaded with demonic action. Loaded. And especially up in the 33rd Mason, up in that area. Star Wars pictures or devices on anything. And I hereby, as pastor of this church and director of the Christian school, give the teachers in our Christian school power to prohibit lunchboxes with Star Wars, monsters, and so forth on it. If the children want to send the children to our Christian school, they're not going to carry demonic symbols to our Christian school. And therefore, you'll have to find something better for your little one. You say, well, he loves it. That's exactly why you should take it away for him. And Sunday school as well. Bone jewelry. Things of the broken pieces of the body of human beings and bones. Any martial art chants or rituals. If you go to any karate school or anything like this, this type of thing, keep away. In fact, I would keep away from Oriental schools, period. If you're down at the YMCA, just practicing a sport of physics, in judo, something like that, that's one thing. But when you go into their Buddhistic cultures, and if you're involved in their chants and rituals and things, you're in dangerous ground. Unicorns, games, Dungeons and Dragons. Very demonic. Now, after having said all that, there is a tendency by many to overreact, however. and implicate everything ever used by the devil, whether or not the item in question has any direct link with occultism or not. I mean by that, see, the devil has used almost everything in the universe. And he can't claim all of God's creation. He cannot, just because he decides to use things of creation, he cannot therefore prohibit the rest of us from using creation because he's touched it. He says, ha ha, now you can't use planet Earth. See, he can't do that. He can't taint everything just because he's used it. If he uses something there, he has not. If he uses a rock over there, then this rock over here that he hasn't used is not his. And if he uses a tree over there, the same tree over here that he's not used is not his. And you must not jump to the wild conclusion that because you read someplace, well, they use these kind of trees, that therefore you can't use these trees anymore. But don't use the trees in the same symbolic way as they did, in the same ritual. But using the tree without that regard at all, it's God's property, it's ours, it's for people on planet Earth. Demons don't inhabit every similar object. If demons, if there was a certain symbol, and that was a demonic symbol in a certain nation at a certain time, and they used it as a point of contact with those people in connection with their rituals, it does not mean that that same symbol used by other people at other times in histories, that demons are also inhabiting those symbols, and those are homing devices for them. They know the symbols that are theirs and the ones that are not. They know the connection. They know the individual using that thing in a relationship. You know, they know that thing that came from the archaeological bed or was made for that purpose or whatever. They know what belongs to them, what doesn't. Now, let me give you an example. Fir tree boughs that were used by the heathens. It does not mean that all fir trees from now on and all the boughs of fir trees, first want to decorate the home with fir trees, boughs, that it is demonic and demons or that. It does not mean that. It does not mean that candles, heathens have used candles. It does not mean you can't have any, go down to the candle shop and have a candle in your house because heathens have burned candles. But don't use candles in the same way for the same purpose as they do. It does not mean that now on you can't have any rabbits. Because the feet have been used for good luck, used in demonic charms. It does not mean you can't use holly or have a holly tree because the devil has used holly. The devil has used the symbol, a circle, and triangles and hexagons and crosses. It does not mean from now on we can never have anything with a circle. There aren't many shapes left. You know, you got a square and a rectangle and a rhomboid and a trapezoid and a few things like this, but he doesn't own all triangles. He doesn't own all circles. He doesn't own all hexagons and he doesn't own all crosses. We didn't use a plus. You can't even add anymore. See, because it's a plus. In this book called Classic Myths, and this book is loaded with false gods. It's all it is from beginning to end is false gods, which means demons. On page 181, I read this. Pan and the personification of nature. It was a pleasing, put the word pleasing, it was a pleasing trait in old paganism that it loved to trace its every operation of nature, the agency of deity. Later, Pan came to be regarded as a representative. The imagination of the Greeks peopled the regions of earth and sea with divinities, to whose agency it attributed the phenomena that our philosophy ascribes to the operation of natural law. So Pan, the god of the woods and fields, whose name seems to signify all, came to be considered a symbol of the universe and the personification of nature. Universal Pan, says Milton in a description of the creation. Universal Pan, knit with the graces of the hours and dance, led on spring eternal. So here's Milton, John Milton, poet laureate of England, attributing the world to the god Pan. And we have pantheistic teaching in the world. Now, the interesting thing about that, and here we see a little later, Pan in Wall Street. The Pan, however, is not yet dead, but live alive in the practical atmosphere of a Western world. And talks about in Wall Street, Pan, and so forth. I don't doubt that he's there in the demon form. The point being that that means we can, are we ought to, should we avoid all woods and field now because the devil says these are, Pan is involved in these things, God Pan, so we can't have the woods, we can't have the fields. We can't walk, go on the seas, we can't climb on the mountains because they've used mountains and high, and hills. That means we can't use trees, leaves, roots, or soil, valleys, deserts, seas, or caves. Stars, suns, or moon, winds, hail, lightning, thunder, rain, snow, sun. And we can't even have cows in our barns because they are the Hindu gods. You can't have cats because you're Egyptian gods. Gods, they've used almost all the animals some way, some place. You can't have animals. It means you got to avoid furniture stores because you got owls and frogs there. Grocery stores because alcohol demons are there. Buses because they have an advertisement in them, perhaps, of the occult. You can't go in the houses of friends, relatives, and parents because they've got some demonic symbols. You can't use handkerchiefs because the demons have used handkerchiefs in the, you know, all the magic users always use a handkerchief. You can't use tables because they levitate them. You can't use colors. Black, red, orange, and white are all colors that the demons have used. So they are demonic colors. You can't use black, white, red, or orange. He said, oh, black, you can't use black. Well, you can't use white, red, or orange then. And you see, you cannot avoid the world you live in. The devil doesn't own everything he's touched. Now, I'm trying to bring a balance in this. I'm trying to show you the danger and yet keep you from running way overboard and getting fanatical on it and getting ridiculous. Don't unfairly link symbols that stand for non-occult things as occult because they were occult once, or even still, they use the same sign. There's a difference in what is designed to be an occult sign and used in connection with those kind of people and those signs that look the same or are similar. For example, star. Star has been used by many different countries and many different things for many different reasons, and a star does not necessarily belong to the occult. It may belong to God. God has used the stars as well. Demons know what is theirs. Now, you may ask the question, what if we don't know? What if we don't know if something is or not? You have to use your own judgment. And you need to pray about a matter. And you need to err on the conservative, safe side. And if something is questionable, and you really think this may be, you're really better off without it. But you can't go strip your house of every single thing that there is. There are people that have, well, people that would go through your house for you and strip you of everything you own. It's important that we recognize in Romans 14 that God teaches not to be judging others. Every man according to his own conscience. If you disagree with the things I say and my decision, you have no fight with me. I am only trying to bring the balance the best that I see it. I do not aver that I have the balance. I could not draw a line down in the middle of all these things and tell you exactly where the line is. I don't know. I couldn't answer all the questions you could ask me, but I got this in my house. I got that. I will not be responsible for making decisions. So you can say, well, my pastor said I could keep it or I can't. I'm not going to be the decider. I'm going to give some parameters, and then you have to stand between you and God, your own objectivity and subjectivity, your own prayer, your own decision, your own thing, and I would counsel you to be careful of your college-bred skepticism of the spirit world. I would also caution you to be watch out for this subjectivity that says, well, I paid $300 for it. I hate to give it up. It's a class ring, this and this. If you've got something sentimental that's got demonic symbols, you better to get unsentimental with it and get rid of it. You're just safer that way. And if you don't know, you're going to have to make those kind of judgment based upon all the parameters and the things that I give you and other things that you know and make a decision on the matter. And then what you can't come with is some things you think are all right, but you're not 100% sure and you don't feel it's reasonable to give them up. You're going to have to come before the Lord and say, Lord, you know my heart. I'm asking you to don't allow anything in this area. I bind that spirit in Jesus' name. If there's anything here, inadvertently, when we eat food, Lord, if there'd be anything in here that is a poison, it would hurt my system. I ask you to cleanse it. I won't purposely eat food that I know is poison. I won't purposely eat that I know will harm me. But if I eat anything accidentally, you'll protect me as long as I have a right heart and spirit and being honest with God about the matter. That's important that you be honest with God about the matter. We need to avoid paranoia and tell everything, it reeks with demons and everything, and because somehow you read that, don't be loading each other down with, you know, somewhere I read this back here in this person's book and this person's testimony. You can't go by our testimonies. You can't go by the fact that demons have touched it somewhere in the world. There was time when violins were not allowed in churches in America because the square dance and hoedowns used the violins and back in Abraham Lincoln's day. But the devil doesn't own the violin. He doesn't own instruments because the devil picked up an instrument and uses it. Beethoven and others had that long before the hoedowns. And then maybe they were doing, I'm not sure what they were playing either. But the point is, the thing is, it didn't come out of a demonic-oriented, or violin is not, or any instrument. These instruments are not demonic instruments. They're not exclusive for that type of thing. They're not used as the occult. They're used broadly, and we cannot implicate the instrument but what's played. Now, we live in a devil's world. Satan is the god of this world. There's no way you're going to get away from demonism in America. And there's no way you can become a monk and an Essene, hide in the caves, and never see demonic symbols. It isn't like if you see a demonic symbol, you're going to fall over and be possessed by demon spirits. That's not true. We live in a demon world, and you're not going to be able to get away from it all, but you can keep your walk right, your heart right, your position right, and so forth, and avoid those things that you know are cultish, and I will talk more about that later. There's a difference between fairy tales and nursery rhymes. Most fairy tales are about fairies, and little demon spirits, these things that float around and do all these things, most fairy tales are in the occult. Nursery rhymes are as the case may be. You have to look at each one individually. Many of them would be innocent, no problems. Don't just condemn everything wholesale because it falls under a category. You have to look and see what it is. living in this world of the devil, we cannot avoid seeing his symbols about us everywhere we go. Adverse reaction to his symbols is not an opening for demons. If you go about and see demonic symbols and you have an adverse reaction to that symbol, you have left no opening for demons to come in. You say, well, what if a person visits Japan? Isn't he opening himself up to demons, loading him because of all the stuff over there? What if you're a missionary? What if you're a missionary? You can come back demon-possessed? You can come back with 20 million Oriental demons? No, my friend. When you go with an adverse reaction to demonism and heathenism, you can come back without a taint of it on you. But you start loading back all the demonic symbols like so many American missionaries have done. So many American missionaries have taken demonism, demonic things, brought them back and put them on the walls, worn them in meetings, preached in missionary meetings and put on demonic things. And this is what the chief wore, the voodoos and all this. And I wonder who converted who. And they bring all the demonic things back and load the homes up with them, load the things up and give them out as gifts to friends and send them from their, you know, abject ignorance. You can't avoid demons in other people, but you can avoid wearing their signs and the points of contact, which is different than walking among it, to be wearing it on you, claiming it for you. If you live in a house that's just loaded, you're boarding with somebody, and the house is loaded with occultism. I mean, it's loaded. Move out. But you're living with somebody, be relatives, friends, parents, anybody, and they got a few, you know, items around. You know, it's not loaded with, it's not occultism, but I mean, you know, you got everything. You got a, you know, got this, you know, you got, you may have, they may have a picture of a spider or a snake or a frog or, you know, some toad or something like this. They may have a few things in the walls, a couple things here and there. A typical American home with a few things in it. Most typical American homes have a few occult items in them, things that deal with that, and they don't know it. You're not going to be attacked as long as you recognize it, as long as you have no affinity towards it. They don't have an opening just because the object is there. You can't roam a field and see an alligator and all of a sudden demons enter you, even though they were worshipped as gods in Egypt. Along with the frogs, they were worshipped as gods. But even the flies were... well, no, that's different. But... you can just say, Lord, in this household, you know my heart and my spirit. I'm against heathenism. I'm against that thing in the wall. I come against that demon that would use that as a point of contact in this home. I bind that spirit from hindering me in the name of Jesus Christ. And I claim your protection of God, and I don't think you have any problems. I wouldn't worry about it at all. People live in the Orient underneath all that demonic stuff all about them, never touches them. Because you haven't given your heart to it. You haven't opened up to it. It's not. You have nothing to do with it. But you can't collect their gods and their homing symbols for yourself. There's a difference in being around something you can't help and have no affinity and in deciding to make a collection of those symbols that they have, or their gods and their homing devices. And that's what you got to watch out for. See, well, I've got 900 frogs saved. Why are you saving frogs? When the gods of the Egyptian, why save that kind of a creature? Pet snakes, I would never have a symbol. The serpent, that old serpent, the devil, I would never have a symbol of that. Live snakes around your house, I wouldn't have a symbol of that thing for anything. I feel we should not fear the devil, nor his signs, but fear adopting his signs or his ways. There's where the difference is. Don't adopt his signs, but don't fear his signs. Walk around them, don't worry about them, they can't touch you. But when you adopt him and make him yours, then you're claiming something. It's just like claiming his word against God's word. When you claim God's word, there's a power there. And when you claim the word of Satan over God, there's a power there. And you claim the devil's symbols, and there's a power there. But if you don't claim them, they're about you, they can't touch you. Even unbelievers, even sorcerers, trying to get into the occult, find that they just can't automatically have power with the demons. They have to work at it. I've read where they've had to work. The more that a sorcerer has experience and lives in and becomes involved with the demon world, the more power they get. And to find this person's got great power because they spent lots of time in it. And the new source, they work. I read stories of people, they worked and worked to get horns to blow automatically, and they struggle, and they give themselves over to the devil, and they try, and they don't get it. And it's the same thing in the Christian world. You just try to get God's power all the first day. You